You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
The Matrix, released March 31st, 1999. Budget on this thing was $63 million. Box office, $463.5 million. And is directed by the Wachowskis. I am joined once again by Jack Valley. What's going on, Jack?
What's up, GC?
Not much, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually really looking forward to this.
And I'm joined by Alex and Sarah.
What's going on, sir? It's been a while.
It's been a long time. I was just on with you guys the other day talking about It. It's a little Stephen King action. And you made a point, Jack. Is Stephen King's just everywhere right now. It's pretty crazy.
I think I was reading earlier today, he's got another project that might be due out before the end of the year, but I can't remember what it was. I don't know. I don't know if it's blind luck or what, but something, he did something right. I mean, it's kind of crazy to have so many projects out right now, but we're not doing a fucking Stephen King aftertaste.
No, okay? We're not. But I mean, I
get centered, boys.
I did this for a reason. I said this for a reason because he is more viable now than he was when this movie came out in 1999.
Okay.
So in 1999, we had a different zeitgeist in film, didn't we? It was a little bit of a. I was looking forward to a little movie called The Phantom Menace, which would come out a couple months later. This came, it hit me right in the throat. I was not expecting this. I don't think anybody was. What are your guys' experiences with The Matrix? How did you guys first experience it?
I don't remember where I was or what movie I was watching, but I do remember seeing the trailer in theaters. Even being a pretty big Keanu fan at that point, I was pretty great trailer. I was instantly hooked. That was definitely going to be on my most watched or movie I'm most looking forward to list.
Really? So you saw the trailer and you were automatically hooked?
Yep.
Yeah, I believe the trailer had like Trinity going through the building or something. I didn't watch it for this, but it was a pretty well done trailer. I do remember that. Jack, what's your experience with this film?
So I'm going to make everybody feel really old right now, because when this movie came out, I was 10 years old.
Motherfucker.
Motherfucker. So my experience with this movie was my mom had it on VHS tape. And when I was pretty young, I remember watching it, but just being way too young for it. And not, you just, you know, some movies, you're just not ready for them. You're not mentally ready. So I just thought it was a boring action movie, because I didn't think it had enough fight scenes in it and all kinds of shit.
Oh, you were a piece of shit as a little kid.
I still am. There's not enough most people.
There's not enough fight scenes in The Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. At 10 years old. How about we not disparage a fucking child, okay?
You know what? I remember seeing that trailer, and Alex, you said you were hooked. I remember being turned off by the trailer, because all my focus was on Star Wars at that point. Like, I didn't want anything or anybody to ruin my Star Wars experience. So I saw that trailer, I was like, fuck. There can't be another movie that comes out that ruins this film of mine. You know, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about how I experienced this and how I ended up changing that theory. But I tell you, when I first saw this, I was kind of like Jack. I was turned off by it. I didn't really enjoy it. It really took a few years to grow on me. But I will say, by the time 2003 rolled around, I was highly anticipating those two films. Yeah, but it took a while to grow on me. I wanted to turn away from it, because I was just like, okay, Star Wars is coming out. I don't want anything to do with this. But I'll tell you what made me realize this was for real, guys. The thing that made me realize this was for real was when it took that Oscar for Best Visual Effects away from Lucas this year.
Mm-hmm.
When it won that Oscar, I was like, fuck, they've arrived. You know, there's a new thing in town, and it's pretty incredible, and I better pay attention. And, you know, $463 million, and that's pretty huge for...
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy thing about this movie, too, is that, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about this before on podcasts, but this is one of the great movie years. Like,
yes,
even the shittier blockbuster movies are halfway decent in this year. So I wanted to kind of rattle off a list of some of the other movies that came out in 1999,
all right? Good and bad?
Mostly good here. So,
okay.
Obviously, we know Phantom Menace, okay? Disney had a Tarzan movie that was okay. Brendan Fraser had The Mummy, which is halfway decent. But then it gets pretty nuts. You've got American Pie, Toy Story 2. I know some people hate this movie, but American Beauty. Mm-hmm. The Sixth Sense, Fight Club, The Iron Giant, The Green Mile, The Blair Witch Project, Being John Malkovich, Magnolia... Kubrick had his last film, Eyes Wide Shut, Office Space, Johnny Depp and Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow, The Insider, Galaxy Quest, Three Kings, Austin Powers 2, I think, South Park, Dogma, Election. I mean, this movie, this fucking year is insane.
That's incredible.
Super influential, especially when you look at the people who are still working from all of these films. It's absolutely crazy that 99 yielded all of this good stuff. And I mean, the list goes on. It's Man on the Moon, Straight Story. 99 is an amazing year for movies.
A lot of those are the beginnings of many long careers, like you said, that are still going on today. Right. You know, it's pretty incredible when you write off that list.
Right.
You know, Alexander Payne, Election.
Mm-hmm.
David O. Russell from Three Kings. You know, I mean, there's a lot of really viable talent in that list.
Yeah, and I mean, Fincher kind of solidifies his status with Fight Club. You know, he's not a one-trick pony. So
absolutely,
it's a big year.
So when The Matrix comes out in March is it's not really a blockbuster year month. I feel like the studio paid $63 million on this thing. It doesn't seem like, I mean, they release it in at the end of March. It doesn't seem like they have that much confidence in it, and I don't think anybody really expected. Nobody could expect what happened with it, but for it to catch on with anybody, you know, these two released a movie. The Wachowskis released Bound, which I ended up watching for my first attempt at at college. I was in a film class, and she was wanting to show us these two things in film, And it's like, okay, we're going to show you film noir. And one of them was like Double Indemnity, and the other one was Bound. And I had never seen Bound before, and I was just captivated by that film. Not just because Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly are extremely hot in it, but just because, like, it's just so well done. It's just like such a well-done thriller. You know, she was the one who pointed out, like, yes, there's a new movie coming out with these guys, and we're going to go see it. And I did end up seeing it for that college course. It's pretty incredible when you think about that they went from Bound to this. And I'm going to make an argument, and I think I reposted an article I did on the site a couple years ago detailing whether I thought this particular movie we're going to talk about today kind of ruined their careers. I want to kind of make a case where I kind of think that kind of happened eventually. All right, boys, what do you say we jump in full proper into this film, huh?
Yeah.
The film opens. We have a tin of green that covers every single logo. We already feel like we're in another world. And then the screensaver coding that kind of falls down to the title of The Matrix.
Did you have that screensaver, Garrett?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yahoo GeoCities? Or GeoSites, rather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many fucking Matrix websites, dude.
Yeah, this looks cool, but it took fucking 30 minutes to load. Great.
Yes.
And it would crash my fucking computer. It was the worst. And then there were the ones where you could, like, input your own text. So, you know, it would be, like, you could change the color and then, you know, make it say, like, fuck you, bitch. You know, falling down the street. Mm-hmm. It's the best. Wish I still had.
All these backward letters and these Japanese coding, all of this is on the screen. And it's just, you're right, dude. It's just, it did. I had the screensaver. I think all of us did. And it's pretty incredible. Incredible opening. We hear a conversation with Trinity and Joey Pants. Trinity is saying that she's wary of someone listening in, and I'm already on guard about Joey Pants. And that's the thing about this. Like, yes, we eventually learn that his character is going to turn on them later on, but in future viewings, I'm like, I'm paying close attention to this conversation. Like, maybe he's going to, like, he must be a shifty character.
Right.
Well, it's also Joey Pants, right? So, like, sitting down to watch this movie for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, this is the guy. You know what I mean? Like, this is the guy who's going to fucking... He's the rat. He's gonna think on everybody. My guard was way up as soon as his character appears on screen.
Was he wasn't on The Sopranos at this point? Was no? That'd be like in a couple year.
Few more years after this.
A few more years, yeah. So I wasn't really aware. I didn't really know of him that much at this point. Memento would also come out a couple years later. You know, when I first saw this movie, I wasn't really weary of him, but later on, obviously, you know, we definitely catch on later that he is an asshole. So we see cops in the shadow, and some cops just firing at a woman in vinyl. And I'm thinking two things at this point, boys. I'm thinking one, Trinity being against cops is on the bad side. You know, she's fighting against the cops. She must be a bad guy. And two, that we are thrust right in the middle of a story, a la episode 4. We're not getting any beginnings. We're not getting any origins. We're just thrust right in the center of a story. And I find that I love that style of storytelling. I really do.
Yeah. I'm a fan. Just plants you right into the universe.
Yes.
Yeah. Good shit. I particularly like how, as the scene develops, like the way that the action kind of becomes this like gut punch.
Yeah.
Obviously, the first couple times I saw this, I never had the experience of watching this fresh, not knowing anything. But... Mm-hmm. They do a really good job building to a pretty tight little action scene that does a lot of things to establish the world in about a span of like 3 or 4 minutes. It's good shit.
Well, that, you know, that roof jump just kind of sets up the whole, like,
incredible,
you know, bending of matter and space and all that shit.
Yeah. And the whole, you know, as soon as you start seeing like these guys in suits with sunglasses and they all kind of look similar, you know, something's up. And really good shit.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought she was on the bad side when I first watched this movie until I saw those agents talking to the cops. Like, okay, did you get her? You know, it's just, but that for that split second, you don't know what's going on. It's kind of like the beginning of episode 4, you know, where the ship is going and it's being shot at. You don't know which ship is what. It's just pretty incredible. So after she kicks these cops' asses, she takes a call from Morpheus. She gets told to run toward the payphone, and I love how she just jumps through that window and lands. And as soon as she lands, she spins around frantically because she knows that Agent Smith, who I'm going to talk about here in a minute, could be right behind her. Like, she looks frightened. She she rolls around thinking that guy is right on her tail. It's pretty awesome stuff.
Oh, and there's that one line, too. I think we kind of glossed over it. But when Smith is outside the building, the cop says, I think my men can handle one little girl. And he's like,
one little girl.
Yeah. No, Lieutenant, your men are already dead. Oh, I fucking love that shit, dude.
Hugo Weaving is so fucking good in this role. the one constant throughout these movies, and I'm going to do a little bit of defending in the next few. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I'll probably be the one who defends those sequels. But one constant you cannot deny is that how just great Hugo Weaving is in this role. I mean, he's just... He was told by the Wachowskis to do it as a 1950s style news reporter, and he just kind of does it. And the way he enunciates, the way he enunciates words, and the way he just kind of sticks out amongst all these other guys who look kind of similar, phenomenal.
That's awesome.
Well, you know what his voice is based on, right?
Mm-mm.
His voice is based on Carl Sagan, and as soon as you hear Carl Sagan speak, it's crazy.
Yeah, you totally pick it up.
Yeah, it's completely. Yeah, it's really interesting shit.
That's fucking great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's, you know, his interpretation of their direction became one of the greatest fucking astronomers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
With him, meet Thomas Anderson, played by Keanu Reeves. Many people know that this was originally offered to Will Smith, and he turned it down to do Wild Wild West.
I really want to see Wild West starring Keanu Reeves now. What if they just switched? That'd be fucking great.
You know, I've never seen Wild Wild West, so I can't really make a comparison, but I'm gonna say I wouldn't like Will Smith in this role. I just don't think his cockiness would work in this role. Keanu Reeves just kind of embodies this, you know. He was just kind of that dude from the 80s, like, whoa, you know. Even that was in a trailer, you had to see that, you know. Yep. And it's just interesting how he just kind of embodies Thomas Anderson, and the way we meet him, he's this hacker. Is he believable as a hacker? Probably not, but I believe him as the everyman, and I like him in this role a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's not so many scenes with him hacking. Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't have, like, I mean, when we first see him, he's fucking sleeping at the computer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, even hackers have to sleep.
Right. But I think with him...
That could have been a great line in it.
That would have been amazing. Even hackers need their rest, Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Anderson. Yeah.
But the thing I love about Keanu Reeves in this movie is that he doesn't... And people can knock him for this, but he really doesn't bring anything to the role. Like, he's just a blank slate. And I think you kind of need that whoa face that he does all the time. Like, I think it's perfect in this movie.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, elsewhere, not so much. We'll probably talk about it later. But here, this is such a high concept, you know. And like Inception, there are a lot of scenes where you need to be told what's happening because it's just very difficult to figure out otherwise. So in order to take out unnecessary exposition and backstory when he's Thomas Anderson, I think it's just... You know, you have to buy that this guy is an everyman that could kind of, you know, he's fish out of water, basically. And I think he does it, and he does it well. And
yeah, I totally think his acting styles, you know, whatever that is, totally works for the role. I mean, the character is not so much like he's this fucking great hacker, which he is, but like not about the technical skill. It's about like how he views the world.
Right.
And how he feels like there's something off on it, and everything he feels about the world, Trinity tells him, like in that club scene.
It's pretty phenomenal when you think about Keanu Reeves' career, because he had that career in the 80s where, you know, he played, you know, the dumb guy who's hanging out in like Parenthood and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Mm-hmm. And in the 90s, he kind of faltered, and then he just kind of he had a career renaissance with Speed, turned down Speed 2. Which was an amazing career thrust by him. It was really good insight. 2 years later, this script rolled around. And then just this last decade, he's had John Wick. It's pretty phenomenal when you think about the way he's kind of taken this role. Because I used to not like the guy at all. I saw him in Speed. I thought it was just like he was wooden. I'm like, okay, I don't like this guy. But in this, I like him. And that's a good job by the Wachowskis. They made me like Keanu Reeves. And he's really good in this role.
You mentioned Inception, Jack, and I was thinking about this movie all while watching The Matrix and how it uses exposition.
Mm-hmm.
I think Inception overdoes it with the exposition, but here, they do it a lot here, but somehow it works. There's a lot more technical things going on about, the Zion mainframe and like the fucking farms and, you know, growing humans and shit, but it's still not, I don't feel it like it's all that heavy or that, you know, they're really beating home a concept.
Well, I think that when you talk about Matrix especially, there's a lot of archetypal stuff that's going on that doesn't need additional baggage. Like, Inception really is a story about a man trying to reclaim his life, and the backstory and the explanation helps you understand the dream levels, but more so, it's difficult to kind of graft that arc onto something else. With The Matrix, they do a really good job in saying, oh, this is just Alice in Wonderland. So don't, you know, you've seen that story. Just keep that in mind. This is just hero's journey. You know, Jesus.
Yeah, hero's journey, the last hero, the chosen one, all that shit.
Exactly. There's a lot of stuff there that we know from previous stuff. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today. People like to rip Tarantino, at least people who don't like Tarantino, and say that all he does is rip other stories off and filmmakers. Well, The Matrix is one of the biggest hodgepodge gobbledygooks of religious metaphor, sci-fi, fantasy.
Eastern philosophy.
Exactly. I mean,
comic book.
You know, the title of this movie was taken from a novel called The Neuromancer by William Gibson, one of the most famous sci-fi books of all time. That actually just got optioned, and now I don't know what the fuck they're going to do about calling the internet The Matrix. They're going to have to change that. But there's a lot in The Matrix that, like, if all the parts were on their own, they're very derivative. But it's the kind of soup that they put together of all this stuff that makes it unique, and with the visual style and everything else, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So Thomas Anderson is getting messages from Trinity to follow the White Rabbit. This is the one time we see him in his hacker mode, because he gives this guy a some kind of disc. You know, he obviously made it for him. It was obviously pirated, and he's obviously making a lot of money off it. But this is the one time we see it. But here's a weird thing about this scene. When Anderson opens the door, and here comes that religious stuff that you were talking about, Jack.
Yep.
The guy is telling him, you know, hallelujah, you're my savior. You're my own personal Jesus.
Yep.
So all of this.
Well, also. He lives in apartment number 33, the age of Jesus when he was crucified.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. Yes.
Well, shit.
So it is at this point, after the anagram Neo for One, Trinity, and like you said, apartment 33, that I realize religious connotations are going to come fast and heavy.
Right.
Though they don't really start showing up until the sequels. They pepper them in here, but the sequels, they really dwell on them.
Well, that's... Yeah, I mean, they definitely go deeper in the sequels, but it's more in this one that they don't nail down Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism. This one is... They take pieces from all those different religions and make some very broad strokes. Like, you know, cutting ahead later on, it's no coincidence that the thing that brings our hero back is from hearing the voice of the Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, you know, like, but also the Eastern philosophies, the, you know, the idea of reincarnation, all of that stuff. Like, it's, this movie kind of throws it all in a blender. Somehow it comes out clean. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it comes up more later, but this one especially, I think it's a little more, maybe this one's the most politically correct of them, if that kind of makes sense.
But. Yeah, I was going to say, like, that idea, like, really driven home later on when he realizes, like, you know, something that the second movie, I think, explores more, the fact that it's happened before.
Right.
And the whole idea of fate and free will and whatnot, and, you know, him having an arc there.
Right. Right.
Neo follows the White Rabbit. And in the form of the tattoo. And not only do we hear Rob Zombie, this could only be made in 1999, right? Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson on the soundtrack.
Prodigy on the soundtrack.
Prodigy,
Rage Against the Machine. Yeah. Amazing soundtrack, by the way.
Oh, the soundtrack's phenomenal. We see Trinity, played by Carrie-Anne Moss, out of The Matrix, following what she set forth, and corners Neo in a club. A little bit of character development as Neo drops a line that she cracked the IRS database. Now here's a question for you guys. And I thought about this while I was watching it just a little while ago. I finished watching it again. Why does she not just warn Neo here and take him to Morpheus from here, other than having him go through the rigmarole of sending him a phone and taking him out of his job? And, like, why do they do that?
Huh. I never thought about it.
Yeah, it never occurred to me.
It's just like she sees him here. She has him here.
I don't know
if it's like a hero's journey or something.
I think it caters to the whole free will conversation, maybe. Like, they need him to make the decision to go, and when things get a little more dire after the agents show up and stuff, then I think they take a step in and say, okay, maybe maybe we need to put the choice in front of them and make it a little more clear.
It's an interesting idea. But, you know, the whole thing, I mean, he has a hard enough time when Morpheus is in the construct explaining everything that's happening. And he's already been prepped for that.
Yeah.
I can only imagine, like, if she was like, hey, you know that fucking famous guy Morpheus you've been looking for, you know, the famous hacker and shit. Well, you know, he's on the other side. And I don't know. It's not exactly a bar conversation.
Yeah.
True. Good point. So Anderson gets warned by his boss that he needs to do better and then gets a call from Morpheus that gets him to step out of the building. You know, I would really like this scene if it wasn't for the Anderson inner monologue we have to hear.
It is a little douchey. I mean, this is Keanu stretching his acting muscles here.
Yeah. Like it brings out things about Reeves as an actor I just don't like. Like you said, it's stretching him out a little too thin.
Yeah.
But still,
it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Why me?
Yes. I just have such nostalgia for the scene. I can't, you know, this is like a, I fucking love this movie, so I can't show my hand a little bit. But yeah, I never really thought about this scene as being bad, but I guess it was a little douchey.
Oh, the scene itself is
pretty. The scene is great. It's just
when he steps out on that building, I still get lumps in my throat, you know, but it's just when he starts talking to himself, I'm just like, okay, shut up.
Yeah, totally. No. Yeah, when he fucking steps out on that ledge. I mean, there are so many overhead shots that are just amazing in this movie, and that's definitely one of them when he drops the phone.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive how well the visuals hold up.
Yes.
There is one little shot in the movie that's a little off, but man, for the most part, I mean, they created a fucking technology to film this thing, too.
Yeah.
It's impressive. It's still great.
Yep. It's very impressive. In fact, they released a DVD, right, when this movie was released, that was just, it was choppy, it was grainy, it wasn't really good. When they re-released these on DVD and then later on Blu-ray, they fucking cleaned it up, and this film now is beautiful to look at. I mean, yeah, everything. Really, it's just a gorgeous movie. Every single shot could be taken directly from a comic panel. You know, it's a really beautiful film. And I think a lot of the tinkering they did with it after they re-released it can be attributed to how much it holds up.
One minor effect flaw that I did see was when the Sentinels are attacking the ship at the end.
Yes.
Because it's like, it's dark and you can totally tell, like, there's some alien shit going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Sentinels are a little lighter, you can see like the defined outline.
That's true.
It looks a little weird, but like out of the whole movie, I think that's the only one that kind of stood out to me. So fucking kudos for them for the transfer and whatnot.
So he drops his phone, and then we cut to Thomas Anderson getting interrogated by Agent Smith. And in a really weird Cronenbergian scene, Smith sews his mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And puts a bug in his stomach. I mean, this is something I would expect in any like horror film or slasher film from the day, or even like a Cronenberg, or I'm telling you, or even David Lynch. You know, I wouldn't expect this in an action thriller. You know,
it's the
only scene that really sticks out to me as being like unlike anything in this movie, and in fact, the entire series.
Yeah, definitely more of a horror element,
but in a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
I think it's a very economical thing to put in the movie. Because, granted, you've seen Agent Smith and the other agents following Trinity, trying to catch her. You've seen a little bit of action from that. But you don't have a definitive, this is the bad guy and this is what they're doing. I mean, he sounds menacing, but and obviously you get a feeling from that. But I do think that having that scene, it kind of tells you that, A, you know, we don't really know exactly what's real here, and like there's definitely manipulation at hand, especially later when, you know, they take it out of them. But also it kind of puts their foot down and it says, no, like, this is a bad guy, something's going on, something's under the surface here, there's a fantasy element to it, like, we need to get the audience on board with the fact that things are not, that something is fucking rotten in Denmark.
Neo gets another call from Morpheus, who tells him to meet Trinity in a car by the tunnel. And I gotta tell you, man, we were talking about how beautiful this film is to look at. I love the way the water is falling around Neo in this tunnel.
Yeah, still one of my favorite shots in the movie.
Oh, it's such a good shot. Such a good shot. You know, and this is at a time when taking stuff out of comic book panels wasn't the thing to do. You know, like, it was like the entire film, just so different, you know? So Trinity takes this huge mechanism to Neo's belly, and they pull the bug from his stomach. And again, like, it's just like this thing's just sludging around, and I don't know what the hell she has there. But again, it's just, this looks like it's taken directly from a Cronenberg film or something. You know, like this was a year that Existence was out from Cronenberg, so it almost looks like it's directly from that film. It's, but still, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just different in this film.
Great counterpart to Matrix too.
Absolutely. So Neo finally meets Morpheus, and I love the build up to this meeting. Too bad Morpheus comes off more like Dracula than the know-all mentor in this scene. You ever notice that, like the way that thunder's going around, and he's around the pillars, and he's got his hands behind his back? It's almost Dracula-esque, and I wonder if that was intentional. Am I the only one who noticed that?
Oh, well, he's definitely got the fucking cloak for it.
Yeah, it definitely has a little bit of a horror element. I never really thought about it.
I do like Fishburne here. I like how he makes comparisons to Alice and Alice in Wonderland. I like his explanations of the Matrix. I mean, he's got a lot of fucking exposition to do here. And he pulls it off. He does really good. I mean, other people turned down this role, and he took it and he ran with it. And he does a really good job of enunciating his voice to the point of getting his dialogue across. I like the way, because this dialogue could come off as extremely stupid and extremely just full of itself. And I think we get that later in the series, but here it's like it just comes off so well.
Your boy Larry Fish. He has such fucking great pipes.
Yeah. Yes.
To deliver that kind of dialogue. That's more of like a narrator than anything.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those movies that has, actually, it's the defining role for three different actors for me, which I don't know of many movies that I'd have to think about it. But for me, like, this is Reeves' best work. This is absolutely Hugo Weaving's best work. I also think it's Larry Fish's best work. Like, he's great in Apocalypse Now, obviously, and he's got some other great roles, but he's always Morpheus. He's always going to be Morpheus to me. Like, it's just, I think he's phenomenal.
It is a wool pulled over his eyes to hide Anderson from the truth that he is a slave to the machines. What's funny about the scene is where he holds the pills out is that there are so many goddamn reflections and glasses and such that I looked so hard for camera lenses to be in the frame. But they're not there. Like, I don't know how they do it. As somebody who has filmed around mirrors and stuff, like, it is so hard to keep fucking cameras out of frame, but with all the reflections and everything in this film, you never see anything like that. It's just a really good job they do with this film. So Neo takes the red pill and then gets told that Kansas is going bye-bye now. Anyone else getting kind of sick of all the fairy tales being brought up? Stick to one or two, not like four or five, you know?
it's a very pop culture heavy movie. I mean, it spawned so many different things in pop culture, and then in movie, referencing pop culture. There you go.
Yeah, the only thing for me, again, is I think that they're taking shortcuts to explain things to you by using those references. You know, I think they're pretty essential for what they're doing. Because every one of them that they bring up, you understand what they're talking about because you already know that story. You know, so they're probably cutting out a page of exposition.
Probably. I do love the scene of him getting stuck into the Matrix and then getting, quote-unquote, reborn. Again, very Cronenberg-like. Like, and then almost like getting rejected. It's kind of Christ-like, if we go back to the religious metaphors, how he's getting whipped. You know, I half expected when he dropped from the tube, him having his arms outstretched, you know.
When the claw grabs him, he's pretty much in like a little bit of a crucifix shape there. So.
Correct.
Yeah.
That must be intentional, right? I mean, it has to be.
It's a bit on the nose, but, you know.
Exactly. I think they stopped just short of being too on the nose in this film. In the next couple, I mean, we're gonna see it go way overboard. Here they stopped just short, I think.
Yeah.
You know, with all the exposition and things.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So now from the beginning, Morpheus seems dead set on Neo being the one. And do you think all these people from Apoc to Tank were told that in the beginning, since their test failed, that they were going to be the one, and they just got moved to other jobs on the ship? Like, how are these guys quote-unquote recruited to be on this thing?
Well, I thought I always assumed they just got recruited to be part of the crew. I don't think he necessarily thought every single one of them was going to be the one.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, come on, dude, you're fucking wrong 12 times already.
Right.
Yeah. Why are we still going along with your plan? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think he has always been fucking searching for the one, but, you know, in order to do what they have to do, they're gonna need a crew. That's just the way I looked at it.
I never thought that the crew was anything else more than the crew. Like I always thought that they are what they are. They're part of the adventure. What is it, Tank? He's the only one who was born in the free world. Him, his brother.
Brother, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, using the whole like hacker metaphor, I just assumed that they were all very good at what they did, and that in Morpheus's search, he, you know, had to surround himself with the best people in the field of what he's looking for in the one. I don't know. I never yeah. thought they were all supposed to be a messiah.
Well, what's also weird about this crew is they're all in the background the entire film. Our eyes are going to be on Neo and the ones we've already met. So these intros to this crew, they don't really mean much other than, you know, they're just background players. You know?
They're all red shirts.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it. Absolutely. So Neo is hooked to wires and getting rebuilt. You know, I would have saved myself a lot of fucking money and years if I would have just done this in college, just kind of just hooked up to something to get all my knowledge put into my head.
Dude,
that'd be so sweet.
Oh, it would have been so awesome. I didn't have to go through college. It would have been amazing.
I swear to God, every time somebody says, yeah, you should really watch that show, if it's time has passed, I just keep hoping that I live to see the day where I just can just plug in. Just fucking download 6 seasons of The Sopranos into my fucking head, you know, and it just, I've got it. All right.
Yeah, no shit.
Oh, that's like an amazing analogy.
I want to go back and watch Lost and see how bad it is.
Right.
But I'm not going to waste all of my time doing that.
Right.
No, just fucking upload that to my fucking brain.
I mean, and I'll be set. You would gladly watch every fucking 3 to 5 hour movie ever made because you don't have to fucking watch them. It'd be amazing.
Morpheus tells Neo that it's close to the year 2099, but he can't tell him the exact year, which is weird. Like, why can't he tell him the exact year? You know?
Well, I mean, I think it's because the whole planet's been decimated by nuclear holocaust of the machines. Like, I don't think that's...
Yeah, I think they just have no way of like gathering a record of when that happened and, like, how much time has passed.
Mm. Yeah, like...
It says that, you know, we were the first ones to block out the sun.
Right. It also kind of speaks to the cyclical nature of where the story goes later, too. Like, not being able to tell what year it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. You know, when they start suggesting that maybe this isn't the first cycle of this,
yeah.
You know, kind of lends itself to those sort of classic sci-fi tropes.
Alex brings up an interesting point when we quote unquote black out the sun. That's a kind of an extreme response by us, isn't it? Blacking out the sun.
Yeah, you know? It was the whole idea that they thought the machines were solar powered.
Right.
Yeah. So they're like, this is our last fucking hope is to throw a nuclear missile into the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, fuck, that didn't work.
I don't think it's that far-fetched. I mean, we have a president who doesn't believe in climate change, so I feel like
true.
This isn't too
far. Oh, yeah, off. I mean, also, look how fucking strong his eyes are.
Right.
He looked right at that eclipse and was like, fuck you, bitch.
He must have some of that Charlie Sheen tiger blood.
I heard that stuff was really good.
You know what came to mind as I was watching it this time, too, was I didn't realize how close to the Terminator this film is. Mm. Machines attacking, yep. You know, except in the Terminator, the machines don't like us. In this, they do like us. They use us as a, you know, they use us as almost slaves, almost, you know. It's
yeah. It's, we have a relationship.
Exactly.
I don't know if like is the right word, though. You know, do we like gasoline? We're a source of fuel for them, you know.
Source. Okay.
You know, like Smith later on in the sequels, he's kind of a different character, but in this movie at least, he is pretty clear that he's different than some of the other machines. Whether that's programmed in or not is a question for later films, but
yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that the machines like people. I think that they, you know, they harvest them. I mean, I don't think that emotion has anything to do with it, really.
True. I'm just saying they find us useful instead of like eliminating us like the Terminator did.
Oh, yeah, know? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
So Trinity plugs Neo in as Morpheus shows him what is real, what isn't real, what the Matrix consists of. Again, a lot of fucking exposition here, but it's necessary because you have to explain this world. And the Wachowskis were told when they turned the script in that they have to put a lot of exposition in because nobody's going to know what the fuck is going to go on half the time. Mm-hmm. And it works for me. I love being in this world. So every single thing they show me, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm completely into this.
Absolutely.
Positively.
Yeah.
Morpheus describes how mankind marveled at the birth of AI, and a race of machines caused a war while we as people blocked the sun out to defeat them, as well as how we are grown. This is all, like, again, very Terminator-esque. It's one of those things about science fiction where it has that doom and gloom feel to it, but it's still something I like being in. You know, and that's a really hard line to walk, and the Wachowskis do a really good job with that in this film.
I think that's something that you find in a lot of sci-fi, though. Like, if you break it down, and again, like I was saying earlier, Matrix is really a hodgepodge of a lot of stuff that came before it. Obviously, this was after the Matrix, but iRobot completely lifts its whole plot from a sequence in the Animatrix.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Ex Machina really could be seen as a prequel to both Terminator and The Matrix, if it wanted to be. It's an interesting line to have to walk when you start exploring these ideas, because they've just been... It's difficult for them not to explore some of the same things when you get down to it.
How do you guys feel about his training here?
I fucking love the dojo
scene. Love the training.
Me too.
Love it.
Me too.
I love how, like, fast it's cut, too. You know?
Yes.
It's like, boom, show me. Go right to the fucking dojo. And they get it on, like, right away.
You know what's great about it, too, is that a lot of those moves are... They're nice wide shots. They're not quick cuts in the fight scene. But they're interesting cuts. They're comic book angles. Was it X-Men came out a year after this, and then Spider-Man a year after that. We're completely inundated with comic book movies. But, my God, like, The Matrix... absolutely put forward a template for using the camera a lot more dynamically than other action films were doing at the time. Mm-hmm. And this sequence is fucking amazing. I love this scene.
I do too. You know what I like? You know another thing I really like about it too? It's also doing a little bit of character here, because like when we first saw Trinity, she was running up walls, and here we're seeing Neo run up posts. You know, it's just like... we're seeing the birth of what he's going to eventually turn into. It's amazing. It really is a cool scene. And again, like, Morpheus is so mighty here that Neo can't beat him just yet. You know, he just can't beat him.
I like how the whole scene, the fighting itself progresses. He's like, I know Kung Fu. So he just whips out some Kung Fu and they're fighting. And then little by little, he starts like bending the laws of gravity.
Yep.
And the more Morpheus is teaching him about doing just that, like, he just starts incorporating that kind of thing more. And now, the one thing I love, too, is that throughout everything, he kicks him into that post. When he kicks Neo into that post, and he's like, do you think that's fucking air you're breathing? Like, come on, bitch. Yeah. You know, realize where you are and what you can do. I like how Neo takes a red pill. He's grown to accept everything. But still, like, in this sparring, at the end of it, he's like, I know what you're trying to do. Right, yeah. he's still a little apprehensive, not apprehensive, but he's still a little defensive about being told what to do, which is something that he didn't like when he was plugged in. You know,
There's another great thing that this scene to me sort of crystallizes. So amidst everything that this movie has going at this point, and there's a lot, but the underlying metaphor of him saying, you know, you're inside a simulation, some rules can be bent, others can be broken. That's programming. That's computer speak. Like, it always goes back to the fact that he was good with technology, or he was a hacker, or, you know, good with computers, whatever. Like, everything that's happening here, it has this, like, weird sort of grounded angle to it. It for all the crazy fantasy, anytime they start to make reference to the fact that it's a computer program, it sort of centers you, and you're like, I can buy everything here, because at this point, too, computers are supposed to be able to do anything, right? So
and like Alex pointed out, just the escalation of it, you know, they go from the dojo to the roof, you know, and it's just like, just prior to this scene, if I could back up just a little bit, Neo's even looking at him like, no, this isn't real, like, this can't be possible. But then, like, he's learning all this, and it's amazing seeing him process all of this. And that's the advantage of having someone like Keanu Reeves in the role. You're actually seeing him learn this.
Yeah. You know, I always like that part where he's on the roof and he's just like, all right, free my mind. All right, let's do this.
Exactly. He's rubbing his hands together, getting ready to jump the roof.
He's trying to do a Johnny Utah right there.
And you notice there are a couple of little moves that that Keanu Reeves does in that scene, in that dojo scene. And you guys realize that Keanu Reeves actually, he hurt his neck just in the middle of filming, right before all these scenes were supposed to be filmed. So they had to hold off on doing them until the very end. And he couldn't really move his neck while he was training for the scene. He does a pretty good job. I mean, there's a lot of wire foo going on, a lot of long shots. But at the same time, you can tell that it's these two actors going at it. And I find
definitely.
That,
yeah,
that's and, right. And that's what I think makes the scene for me.
For know? Sure. Yeah, for sure. You know, you mentioned the quick cuts earlier. And yeah. They're used sparingly. The edits are used sparingly here, and you could all see it's just them doing it.
Yes.
It's fucking phenomenal.
Morpheus tries getting Neo to free his mind, and then he answers the question of whether when you die in the Matrix, if you die in real life, by saying that your body cannot live without your mind. You know, interesting bit of terminology. Like, that's something I was thinking about, too. Like, if you die in the Matrix, do you really die? And according to Morpheus, yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. So this brings up something that I've always kind of felt about this movie. So I've never read it anywhere that it was a direct influence, but I always appreciate the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie because I think it was super influential on sci-fi. And this is where that point comes to fruition, because I don't know of another movie before Nightmare on Elm Street where if you die in your mind, then you die in the real world. Like, your body makes it happen. And obviously it becomes a thing in Inception, and it's a thing here. But I always felt like Wes Craven never got credit or really any mention for the fact that, like, he kind of provided the template for this idea. And I always like to bring that up when I'm talking about this stuff. So I think it's an interesting sort of line that you can draw between the two films.
That's awesome. That is I never made that connection.
Point. That is a great point. I never really made that connection either, but I didn't, you know, I'm trying to think prior to 1984 if that was ever established in any other bit of science fiction or horror or anything, and I can't think of anything.
It may have been. I don't know, but I've always thought that was the first instance. Maybe it's not. Maybe somebody knows something earlier, but a big part of the reason why I like Nightmare on Elm Street as much as I do is because of that.
Cypher shows a bit of jealousy at Trinity bringing Neo breakfast, and here we get the feeling that Cypher kind of wanted Trinity, and he kind of made a pass at her or something. And now that Neo's come around, her attention has definitely left him, and he's starting to get pissed about it.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, a little bit of soap opera stuff going on here.
Yeah, you definitely see that in the scene before when they're doing the when they're in the jump program.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Trinity's like, come on, let's do it. And Cypher mentions, you know, after Neo fails the jump, like, he says something to Trinity. I forget what he says, but, like, I really like the line, you know, what does this mean? Doesn't mean anything. Everybody fucking fails.
Right.
It kind of plays on the audience expectation that, this is the one, you know what I mean? Because, right. Up until that point, I mean, it's still pretty early in the movie. You know, it's still, like, there's so much resting on him being that person, being that entity. Yeah.
Morpheus sets up the agents in the program that contains a woman in a red dress about, you know, how no one person really has a chance at them. So building up that tension again, you can die in the Matrix, you can die in real life, or, you know, these agents, you're not going to have a chance against them if you fight them. And that's setting up the fights later on. And that's why Trinity was so frightened at the beginning of the film when she jumped through that building, looked around and made sure that they weren't on her ass.
Yeah, because that's all they have. All they have is to, I mean, they can fight, but they can never beat them. So all they have to do is just flee at, you know, by the end of it.
Mm-hmm. We didn't see the Sentinels, these big spider-like machines who live to kill the humans. I fucking love the design of the Sentinels.
I love the design of the Sentinels. And talking about how influential the Matrix was in popular culture, I mean, how many fucking designs?
Yes.
And other movies are based off of the Sentinels, like even today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you could go back and go, well, the Sentinels are based off of this and that. Fine.
I think that they were a direct I think they were a direct pull from an anime. If I remember
I think they
correctly.
Were too. But still, I mean, so nobody's really personified them on screen like this.
For sure.
You know, they might have been around in anime, they might have been around in some form of animation or whatever, but I've never actually seen them on film like this. And Jack said at the beginning of this podcast, like, this is just a huge fucking just blended set of ideas from the Wachowskis and their influences all thrown into one. I mean, they said in the very little press they did, because they even back then they didn't really do too much press about these movies because they want their films to speak for themselves. They don't really talk about them too much. But what they did say was they don't understand how science fiction can't be thinking movies and why thinking movies can't be action movies. Like they wanted this to just kind of be a mixture of everything. That's kind of like what we're describing here. Like everything's just a mixture, and these Sentinels are a part of that. It's a part of their influences. It's a part of what makes them what they are.
Yeah, I especially like this idea. They introduced the idea of this, they're in the Nebuchadnezzar, and they're evading the Sentinels. They find a spot where they can just, turn off all systems and just kind of chill out until it passes over. They introduced the idea of the EMP as like their only weapon against the Sentinels. And I texted Jack this earlier because I watch it today so I can, refresh myself. One of my favorite fucking parts of this movie, and it's so fucking stupid, is so they set it down, they shut everything off, they're waiting for the Sentinels to pass over. Morpheus goes, "Sit it down over there." Right? And sets it down, and then everyone's talking. Or no, Trinity's telling Neo about the EMP weapon, and Morpheus is like, "Quiet." And then he puts on a fucking beret for some reason. That's the weird. Like, I always thought that was the weirdest thing. Like, why? He doesn't wear a hat the whole fucking movie, but, like, this is my Sentinel's evading hat. I gotta wear this shit.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, yeah, that was weird before we started recording. But now that you know it's your boy Larry Fish, it makes sense in the world. Yeah, of course it does.
Makes all the sense in the world. And I like to think that when he was getting his crew, he was just like wearing the beret.
Yeah. Like,
he's not wearing the beret because he's all business with Neo when he first meets Neo.
Right.
He's like, I just got to get my crew together. That's it. There's my crew getting Sentinel evading beret.
Yeah, he was way more like King of New York Larry Fish with the beret.
Yeah, he was.
Recruiting his people.
Cypher then tells Neo about the code and how eventually he will not see the code, but actual people in the programs. It's setting that code up, I think that's interesting.
He's just looking at porn.
I know, right? Sleeping.
Yeah. That's the best.
It's awesome. He then says something interesting. He says that he's wondering why he didn't take the blue pill. Again, he's almost playing mind games. And if I didn't know how this plot is actually going to play out, I think that Cypher, aka Joey Pants, is already bad.
Yeah. Well, I think it shows in that scene. He's like and then you see blonde, brunette, redhead, but he's actually talking with Agent Smith.
Yes.
But one of the things that was a little confusing to me is you have to be dialed into the Matrix. I mean, you need to get that fucking syringe in your head and be transplanted there. Now, is he doing that just through text? Is he having that conversation just through text? And this is just the visual representation of it? That's always been like really unclear to me.
Yeah, I always read that scene as it was kind of unclear, but that was the intent, to like set it up that way. I don't know if they executed it the best, but
yeah.
You know why I think it's not? It's because this entire film is tinted green, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of that dojo scene and this scene. The dojo scene is tinted blue, yellow. This one has a different look to it because there's no green in it. I think this isn't them being plugged in. I think this is the actual world, and I think he is talking to these guys.
Oh, okay.
One thing about this scene,
that's what I took out.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the references that they just kind of like threw in there. Agent Smith refers to Cypher as Mr. Reagan.
Yeah, I was going to talk about this, yeah.
Yeah, and he has like a throwaway line. He's like, I want you to make me somebody important, like an actor. So it's like a Ronald Reagan reference.
I never caught that.
Yeah,
yeah. He goes, I want to be someone important. I want to be an actor. I thought that was funny. I just love the way like Cypher's like taking a bite of this steak, and like he's eating it the entire fucking scene, right? Like, this is such a good contrast to that white slop he has to eat every fucking morning. It's just,
yeah.
And he's eating the steak, and he's just like, he's chewing it the entire scene. It's like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I would want. I want to eat that shit anymore. That steak looks amazing.
The big thing about that scene, though, is that Agent Smith wants the codes to the Zion mainframe.
Yes. Right?
Which is the last stronghold of all the humans.
Big stuff. I can't get you those codes, but I can get you the person who can.
Right.
They then take Neo to meet the Oracle, who's been around since the beginning of the Resistance. I love the games that the Oracle plays with Neo's head. Whether he would have broken the vase if she'd said something, telling him that he isn't the one. She also divulges that either Morpheus or Neo are going to die. You know, and if you notice too, like the cookies are actual like things saved onto your computer, and she gives Neo actual cookies to eat. Just phenomenal stuff. I really like the Oracle scene a lot.
Yeah, she's really good. I always really like this scene because funnily enough, it's something we've been talking about with the Game of Thrones podcasts, but you know, the whole concept of like, you know, what's really going to bake your noodle later on, it would just still have broken it if I hadn't said anything.
Like yeah.
That's a cool idea. The Wachowskis have the fucking stones to kind of go after it as a philosophical concept, and it works.
Question for you guys. Is she a program or an escapee of the system?
So,
I know she's not a program.
You don't think so?
No, I think they explain it in Revolution. It's been I've only seen Revolutions once. That was a couple of times. That was a long time ago. Yeah. But I thought she's like the counterpart to the Architect.
Yes. I don't think I'm going to be showing my hand too much here, but let's just pretend that the sequels don't happen. I think that she's meant to represent, you know, like an errant piece of information. Like, I always saw it as she was a construct of the Matrix, but she was like a necessary construct, like almost, what's the best way to describe this? Almost like a system that hadn't virus scan running a long time or something, you know, something that started creating its own sentience, whether that's, in our terms, like an application or a program or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I never really thought about it all that much.
They didn't cross a black cat. And I love how this is how the Wachowskis point out that there's a glitch in the system when there's a deja vu going on.
I love that
shit. It's like he crosses the cat and he says, yeah, I just saw that cat. And Trinity's like, what the fuck? And they start freaking out about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just a great
reveal. What cat? Was it the same cat?
Yeah.
The black cat?
Great reveal. Fantastic reveal. Mm-hmm. Love it. They're chased through a building, and as the agents get on their tail, they find a way through the building's infrastructure. I like the tenseness of this scene a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and fucking Cypher is just such a cunt.
Yeah. He is, man.
Like, he really is. The drywall particles getting in your nose aren't a thing.
Oh.
he doesn't need to sneeze, but just to tip, you know, where they're located in between the walls is just what a fucking cunt this guy is.
And also what a bad plan on his part. Like, he's got no guarantee he's not going to get shot.
Like, yeah, that's true too.
Like,
yep.
What kind of fuck? Yeah, doesn't have the most foresight, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
I love how the agents can take over and be anybody they like. It makes for a cool effect as well as it's just an awesome superpower.
Oh, you know? It's so cool. It's cool and creepy and, yeah, it works really well. And it's also one of those things that, you know, again, most recent thing, again, is like Game of Thrones, right? So sometimes when they establish rules, it's difficult to stick to those rules because certain concepts can really break a story. I'm glad that the agents have to inhabit a host, you know, somebody who's plugged into the program rather than just appear in the program itself. Because if that were the case, it'd be really difficult to write a story around that, I feel.
Yeah.
Agent Smith captures Morpheus, and maybe it's all the documentaries I've been watching lately, but I really got a weird Rodney King flashback watching that overhead shot of Morpheus pounded on by cops.
Wow.
You guys didn't think about that? It didn't cross your mind at all? Watching these cops beat the fuck out of him?
No.
This is a great fight, though. This is, I think, up until this point, like one of the more brutal fights, because Morpheus' head is fucking cracking the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
I mean,
there
are so many really great moments, too, like the way Agent Smith gets himself off the floor by hitting the floor and just standing up like a fucking boss.
Yeah.
And the way his sunglasses get cracked, like one of the lenses just gets knocked the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
Really visceral.
Cypher, I'm surprised you guys didn't get that. It was in the 90s when this movie was being written and made, so I don't know.
I can see on a visual level where it might come to mind, but I think that race is like the last thing on their mind making the movie.
Mr. Anderson, hand over the what? I don't know what fucking version you were watching, GC, but mine had nothing like that.
Wow. All right. Maybe it's just me. Like Law was saying, I read too much into the film, and I'm just reading too much into it. But I don't know. I got a weird vibe from it.
Hey, you know what, to your point, there's been a lot of documentaries on Rodney King in the early 90s and all that shit. So I got your back.
Cypher then turns on the group, and I love this conversation that Cypher has on the phone about how he just came to the conclusion he did to turn on the group. Like, he's just so menacing, and I kind of wish he'd lived longer, I think.
I like the idea that he's just fucking done. He's just tired of living the fucking quote-unquote real, well, the actual real-world life. Yeah. And it's just the search for the one and just eating this plain bullshit every day. He's just... I don't know if he's necessarily bad or he's just bad from circumstance and just living in the real world.
Yeah, he's basically you know what? Jim
it's
Law.
Like he says, you know, like ignorance is bliss.
Right.
You know, I want to be fucking plugged back in.
He's basically Jim Law whenever we start doing too many Jack's impressions. Like, Jim Law's not a bad guy, but when there's too much Jack's, he kind of can get a little abrasive.
So. Yeah, he can.
You just compare Cypher to Jim Law.
Well, they're both bald, so what do you want from me?
That's true.
I like Cypher going around, like everyone plugged in, just being like, you know, kills APOC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, just detailing his fucking plan and like why he's doing these things. And just out of nowhere, he goes, and if there's anything you need to tell Switch right now, you better do it.
Yeah.
And just fucking unplugs her.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he's got like these long lines of dialogue, and then you better do this now.
Right,
great fucking delivery.
There's some good shit there. I always liked when he's doing that. She looks and she's like, "Not like this, not like this," and then she just drops. Like, maybe some people could read it as cheesy, but I think it works.
I think it works too.
Right. Definitely works in this film. It definitely works.
Because how can he be the one when he's dead?
Right.
I don't believe it.
Great fucking delivery. Yeah, and that is... I don't believe it.
Believe it or not, you son of a bitch, you're still gonna burn.
He's the cheesiest one. Yeah, he's the cheesiest one. He's Tank? He's pretty bad in this.
He's really bad. Yeah, well, we'll talk about him more in the sequels because he asked for more money and the Wachowskis would not give it to him.
Yeah, they're like, get the fuck out of here, Tank.
Exactly.
We'll just get another tank. It's not a big deal.
We barely got out of the first one because of you, all right? Take it easy.
And it is in the government building where I think Weaving really shines as Smith. It's pretty phenomenal listening to him describe, you know, what the perfect world within the Matrix consists of.
They give him such great material to work with here.
Yes.
Like, I just love everything that's coming out of his fucking crazy Agent Smith mouth in this.
Yeah,
it's the smell.
It's great, too, because the best villains are always the ones who... They're not acting out of pure evil. Whenever they can break down where they're coming from, I feel like they become a lot more menacing. Unless it's just absolute fucking psychopath stuff. This is really good shit, man.
Yeah.
You know,
this is almost like, it always reminds me of fucking Daniel Plainview, like the menacing aspect of Daniel Plainview, especially at the end.
You're an orphan. Humans out there are a virus. You're a virus.
Yeah. Just explaining how, like, and then you breed and you spread. And I just fucking love it. It's so good in it.
Right. And like, the way that Larry Fish kind of, his acting in the scene, too, always gets to me because, although there is one little problem with it in a second, but, you know, he's just, like, completely out of his mind. They're, like, shoving smelling salts in his face, and I don't know, he's sort of sweating, and I don't know, you just get, like, it almost becomes a 4D thing. Like, you can almost feel the fucking filth on him and just, like, how bad of shape he's in. It's pretty good acting until it just kind of stops being an issue for him as soon as the helicopter shows up, but it's fine. It's fine.
Neo then realizes that they reach for the switch to kill Morpheus, that the Oracle's prophecies are coming true, and he does have to sacrifice himself to rescue Morpheus from the building. Pretty cool little realization there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trinity goes with Neo, and together they start going through guards one by one in a slow motion shoot 'em out scene that I loved as an angry guy in my early 20s.
Yeah.
In my 30s, I'm watching this, not so much. I don't like it too much. No, no.
I'll tell you, I still like it. Here's my takeaway for that scene, is because I never thought about it until I watched it today. Uh-huh. Is the amount of cleanup all of those farming sentinels are gonna do? Because all I can think about is all those people in the real world just fucking dying.
And this was also used as the template by the Columbine kids to shoot up their school. I mean, I think all that kind of just—I just think about all that as I'm watching this. I'm like, I don't really like it that much as an adult.
Holy shit! We got Columbine. We got Rodney King. What's fucking next?
That's an uplifting podcast.
Yeah. Like that in the movie reminded me of Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, remember that one scene where it was just like Charles Manson and Sharon Tate? Oh, it was crazy.
Keep it to 90s.
That'll be in Revolution.
I fucking I love this scene. This is like one of the scenes I'll throw on like, you know, new TV or something to test out the sound system.
Really? Well, I can understand with the music and stuff you can do that, but yeah, really?
I mean, come on. Like, what do you need? Guns. Lots of guns.
Dude, it's like every fucking video game you've ever played that you just want to turn on God mode and do this shit.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of my problem with it.
I don't know, man.
It's video game-ish.
I love it. Love this scene. This is one of the great action scenes. I love this shit.
They head to the roof, and it is here that Neo escapes an agent by using the bullet time dodge technique.
Yep.
Emotion I blame for many bad future movies, by the way. You know what? And people say this is like the first time it's been used. It wasn't the first time bullet time was used. It was used in car commercials before this. It was actually used in Wing Commander, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. It was just the most commercial, and it got in the zeitgeist in the right time.
This was the first time that it was choreographed this way, though, with like Yuen Woo-ping and all that stuff. And
yeah,
if I remember correctly, the one in Wing Commander had a quarter of the cameras that this one did. And it also, I think that they didn't put a CGI backdrop behind it. I think that's why this one is significant, because this was like the first time that they were blending all these shots with a CGI background and all that shit.
Mm-hmm. It's the first time they blended it. You're right about that. I still think it works, though. Like, it's good in showing Neo's abilities.
I'm still sold on it.
Yeah, that shit's so cool. Trinity, help! And then, it's the fucking...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So cool.
They take the helicopter over, and I love Neo just firing gobs and gobs of rounds in this room, and yet not one bullet hits Morpheus.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing it's how awesome. Many bullet casings are falling out of that fucking helicopter.
I know.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best.
I will say, with all the water and bullets falling, it was beautiful. Again, it's beautiful to look at. Quite a magnificent sight as Neo takes Morpheus to safety, like you were saying, Jack. Mm-hmm. You know, diving out the window and all that. We've had so much exposition to this point, and there's been a lot of data dumping. There's been a lot of just setting all this up. Mm-hmm. Once this movie gets going, it's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Neo should have told the first thing Neo should have told Morpheus when he grabbed him. After the jump, is, hey, dude, Tank wanted to kill you. Tank was ready to pull the plug. He fucking did a eulogy. He set up candles. Yeah. Like, he was ready to fucking pull the plug on you.
I know that he's your favorite, but I think I should get double rations from here on out.
So. Come on, give me some more of that white gruel.
Right. I'll take two helpings of the Garmin Bosia, please, sir.
Great promo shot as the helicopter crashes and Trinity flies to safety. Fucking, I love that shot.
Oh, dude.
Oh, that's the fucking shit. It bends before it just explodes. Fucking awesome.
Like,
love that.
There's like six different shots in the sequence that are amazing. Obviously, the Morpheus jumping to the helicopter and then he's not going to make it. And he jumps. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Morpheus hanging out of the helicopter is pretty great. Fucking the helicopter falling over the edge and Neo just like a fucking boss. Taking the line and just wrapping it around his arm is the best shit, dude.
Yeah,
the
I love that
best
shit.
Absolutely. I was talking to Adam today. He was saying that he would really like a 3D re-release of this film. I think with shots like this, I think they could work. You know, if they do it right.
Could work.
Agents want to order the strike of Sentinels, but Smith doesn't want to give up just yet. You know, he still wants to fucking do this. He has no fucking give up in him. He shows up.
The other agent should have been like, "You feel that sting? That's pride fucking with you."
Fuck Pride.
That's fuck a great Pride. Point. Why is Agent Smith the only one who really sticks out here? These other guys, they're there, but fucking Hugo Weaving's the one who sticks out.
So one of the ideas that I like about the sequels is the... I don't know how deep I want to get into this. Let's just say the sequels bring forth a concept that I like. I'm not sure that they do it properly, but when you take Neo and you give him an absolute foil and you put it in terms of, let's say, a mathematical equation trying to balance itself out, the Agent Smith stuff becomes even more fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's tough to know what they knew when they were making this movie. You know, because there's like a whole context thing that...
Yeah.
That's difficult to discern with some of the Agent Smith stuff. But I just like the idea that he's kind of a line of code gone rogue, you know? Because that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, part of people do in IT is they just fix those problems. That's what help desk does, mm-hmm. right? If it's fixing some program running, fixing a website, like, you know, we had to experience a couple weeks ago, shit like that. I mean, shit just goes wrong sometimes. I think Agent Smith in The Matrix is just a sort of a digital or physical representation of that. And I think that's all there is to it.
Good call.
Still has the same end goal, though. Like, he still has the same mission.
Well, I'm not even sure that he
has gone wrong. Oh, really?
I think that his mission is what he says to Morpheus. He's like, I have to get out of here. Whereas the other agents, I think their mission is just to control the humans.
Mm-hmm. I saw it a completely different way.
I saw
them more as like a security force. And I can see what you're saying about like how his mission does change, Agent Smith's changes, from just like kind of keeping things at bay and getting the codes to the Zion mainframe to just defeating Neo. Because they're almost like two halves of the same coin, you know?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I always assumed that his end goal was full sentience. He's like the next step of evolution for a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Truer than AI or something, right? Like, self-aware to the nth degree. And that his end goal was always to make it outside of the construct that he was created in. Yeah, it's interesting. I never really read it that way.
Smith shows up to disrupt Trinity's phone call, and it's all up to Neo from here on out. So Trinity's out of the picture. Everyone's out of the picture. It's only Neo. Great one-on-one bullet fight between the two. I love the almost Western-style standoff they have that precedes their fist fight.
Oh, it's so good.
Mr.
Anderson.
Again, if you know the Wachowskis, you know they're complete geeks. This is probably completely intentional.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Smith is on the brink of killing Neo when he escapes, running through patches of watermelons and going through the same building from the beginning of the movie. And you guys caught that, right?
Yep.
That's how the agents knew where he was going to be, because it's the same room that Trinity was in the beginning of the film.
Right. Yep.
But the agents aren't fooled second time. They know what room he's headed to, and Smith kills Neo, only to have him revived by a kiss and a profession of love from Trinity. Very fairy tale like.
I'm a sucker for it, though.
I am too.
I'm a softie for it.
Film,
I fucking love
film,
that whole
I'm
thing.
Into it. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? And the fact that she does it in the real world makes so much more sense than, because she was going to do it before in the train station at the train stop. She was going to tell him all that shit. Agent Smith has a cock block, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything.
And that whole thing though, what's he doing?
Right.
He's beginning to believe.
So good. It's so good.
Dude, there's so many fucking fuck yeah moments.
Absolutely.
And that's definitely one of them.
The fucking, oh God, there's so many things. But like, obviously, when he's in the hallway and he's revived, now get up. And he just stands up. And it's like he finally has achieved enlightenment, you know? It's like it visualizes everything as Matrix code, but it's more like he's moving at a pace where he finally understands that he's writing the rules here. Like, there's nothing else that has to govern him. It's really it's a really provocative way to show that. It's very fucking cool.
You know, every time I watch it, I get chills, and you just describing it gave me chills again. I mean, it's a really good realization of what he is.
Right.
I'm with you guys. Love this part a lot. The only thing I don't like about it is how like nonchalant, like they show Neo and he's just kind of like just doing it like one handed, like just like okay, I'm bored by this. I don't really like that too much. You know, that's something that Will Smith would probably do if he was in this fucking movie. You know, it's just like It's a little too much, but other than that, I'm fucking with this entire scene.
Yeah, I mean, dug it. I thought it was more of just like, holy shit, I can actually put my hand behind my back.
Really?
It's just more of a realization of his capacity for what he could do in the Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, he's achieved true enlightenment. You know, it's mm-hmm. that's, you know, talking about the religious overtones and stuff. I mean, to hear it is back again. I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's a great fucking moment. It totally works for me. I love the fact that he's now beyond this. You know, he's achieved that next level. It's the same kind of idea from like 2001: A Space Odyssey. You know, where that movie ends up, very similar kind of thing. And it's just in a different form. I really, really like this.
Meanwhile, Sentinels are making their way to the ship, and Neo shows up just in time to ward them off. We then see Neo fly toward the camera, Superman style, and the screen fades to a Rage Against the Machine-infested black until we pick up the story 4 years later.
Fuck yeah.
And that is our film, boys. Very Superman style ending, wouldn't you say? And that is our film.
One of the best punctuations
yes.
in music, or in terms of having music just fucking throw itself right into your face as the credits roll. Mm-hmm. Fucking love it.
Yeah,
I do too. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you boys give The Matrix? I'm going to go to Alex first.
Ah, god damn it, hell, GC.
I'm trying.
I absolutely love this movie. This is one of those movies that I can watch anytime, like at any point in the movie. It doesn't matter where it is. And like, I'm committed to watching the end of it. Like this from the start. Saw it when it came out in the theaters in 99. One of my first DVDs ever.
Really?
Watched the fucking shit out of it. And I love everything about this movie. Definitely a top 10 movie for me. I really want to give it a 10 on 10, but those are reserved. Those are reserved for a choice few. And since I don't do half ratings, this is an easy 9 on 10.
Jack?
I have loved this movie since before I was into movies. Like, this predates any of my movie buff stuff. We'll talk about it with the sequels a little bit more, but I was incredibly excited for those movies based off of this one. Everything about this movie works for me. It's... I reserve the term perfect movie for a handful of flicks. I think this is absolutely one of them. So for me, this is a 10 on 10.
Question, Jack. You said in the beginning of the podcast that you, when you first saw it, you just thought it was a boring action movie with not enough fight scenes. When did you actually adapt to, oh, this is actually a really good movie?
We got hair on his balls.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much as soon as I saw that in the mirror, I was like, oh, okay.
All right, I love The Matrix now.
Gotta change my opinion. Yeah.
I mean, a specific time, I don't know. Just at a certain point, I remember, I think I had like a copy of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and then remembering that it was the same guy, and I was like, oh, I should watch that movie again, and it was also one of those movies, it was a rated R movie that I could watch, you know, because it didn't have any nudity mm-hmm. or anything like that. So it was like this and the Blues Brothers and maybe like one other that we had lying around the house. So I don't know. It was just one of those. I think I bought it on VHS at one point. But yeah, somewhere in there. I just know that by the time 2003, so by the time middle school was ending, guys, was when the second one was coming out. And I was a big fan at that point. So.
Middle school when the sequels were coming out.
Yep.
Man.
Yep. You are closer to the grave than I am.
Fuck off.
You're welcome.
It is hard to ignore the zeitgeist that this movie captured when it came out. It couldn't come out in any other time other than 1999. These guys worked on it for about 5 years. They worked on the script. Joel Silver bought it. And the way they adapted it to the screen is just absolutely amazing. To give these guys $63 million to do what they did with it. Like you, Jack, like I said at the beginning, it took a while to grow on me. This movie has grown. It grew on me. And by the time those sequels were coming out, I was so hyped. And Star Wars was just in the back of my mind at that point. I was like, give me more Matrix. This is an easy 10 out of 10 for me. Yes, I did give it I did give it a little bit of flack for a couple little scenes, but I'm going so far with this movie. I love it way too much to not give it a 10 out of 10. It's just, it's a perfect action movie for me. It really is. I just, I love every minute of it. So it's a 10 out of 10.
I feel like such a pussy for not giving it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, you are.
I really wanted to.
You are.
You should.
All right, can't go back now because then people are going to call me out on it.
Yeah. We'll call you out right now, you son of a bitch.
Welcome to my world, bitch.
All right. Well, when the next Matrix movie comes out and then we do a retrospective in 15 years of this, or when they do the remake, remake, I'll be giving this a 10 on 10.
All right. You'll backtrack and give it a 10 on 10. Sounds good. Hmm. All right, boys. That does it for the first Matrix. People have been asking me, are we going to do the Animatrix? The answer is yes. We are doing the Animatrix. We've spoken about it. All three of us have spoken about it. It could range from a half-hour podcast to an hour podcast. We have no idea how it's going to be, but we are going to cover it. That's going to be next week, and then we'll do the two sequels. Boys, quite a beginning to this amazing series. I appreciate your help on helping me dissect the Matrix.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So until next week, say goodbye. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
See you.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Question, are they brothers? They are brothers at this point, aren't they? So should I call them the Wachowskis, or should I just call them the brothers?
Just call them the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't.
Sounds good.
We don't need to get some fucking cunt getting pissed off at us over that's semantics.
True. Yeah, any gender.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys.
I'm ready.
All right.
Everything he feels about the world, Trinity tells him, like in that club scene, that that we're getting to. So,
you know, this, and like you said, Alex, this is like the one time we. Sorry, this is the.
And when things get a little more dire after the agents show up and stuff, then I think they take a step in and say, okay, maybe we need to put the choice in front of them and make it a little more clear.
I could only show you the way, Neo.
Right.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I didn't know Larry Fish was on this.
Lawrence.
Total sidebar. Fucking Larry Fish's quote when they said they were making John Wick 2. Mm-hmm. He was in an interview, he's like, when I heard they were making this movie, called up Keanu and I said, man, you better have a role for your boy Larry Fish. It's a true story. You can find that on YouTube.
That's fucking awesome.
Love it. Love it.
He's just from now on is just going to be your boy Larry Fish.
Yeah.
That's how I'm going to refer to him.
That's how he has been to me for the last year. So. He's always Morpheus. He's always going to be Morpheus to me. Like, it's just, I think he's phenomenal.
Someone obviously hasn't seen Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3.
Oh, shit.
But wow. That was back when he was Larry Fishburne, not Lawrence Fishburne.
Larry Fish, please.
Larry Fish, come on. Larry Fish. We established that.
Yeah, get on board, man.
So Larry Fish explains that it's all around us. Good one. And is...
His reaction still to get in the first jujitsu training is still fucking great. I still love it. I agree.
Morpheus tells Neo that it's close to the year 2099.
Oh, shit. Am I getting ahead of ourselves?
You get a little bit ahead. That's fine. Oh, okay.
You're ahead, huh?
You are. Garrett?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Are you guys there?
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man, I need a new cord. I am so sorry.
That's right.
Why are you guys laughing?
Because it sounded like you just, I don't know.
It sounded like you got unplugged from the Matrix and just fucking disappeared.
Or like you just smashed somebody's head against a table to quiet them down. One or the other.
You're right about that.
Would you?
We have to say about a size 14.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Did we gloss over Morpheus jumping out the window and stuff?
Yeah, we glossed up.
Wait, no, hold on. I'm trying to. Did I fuck that up? No, they go to the roof. And then they grab the chopper. That's right. You're right. They go to the roof first. Yep.
Yeah, they go to the roof first. Yeah, I'm looking at my. Okay. Yep. Yeah, they go to the roof first.
Sorry.
It's okay.
And since I don't do half ratings, this is an easy 9/10.
Oh, Jack will be happy about your non-half ratings.
Yeah, good job.
So till next week, say goodbye. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
Yep.
Thanks, boys.
Jesus. What the fuck is that?
Jesus.
I am what the fuck was that?
I am plugged.
Oh. That's what happens when you unplug.
Yeah.
Fucking, I really should have given it a 10/10.
Yeah.
God, I hate myself right now.
Oh, I love how Jim Law is becoming super defensive. Oh, he's becoming super defensive Jim Law now. Oh, this is great.
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget...
I can't get enough of Super
Bob Odenkirk.